Hello and welcome to From the Rookery Inn, a podcast about a life following Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John. With me is Mike.
Ho, ho, home win.
And Jason.
Good morning.
And it is, as Jason, the morning after Watford won 1-0 at home and beating Norwich City. That keeps us happy at Christmas time, which is very important at the moment. Mike, you were at the game. You were in the stadium. Yes. There were meant to be 2,000 other Watford fans in there with you, but fortunately we're not doing that at the moment. What was it like in there? How is it different? You've been there for every game. You've been there first lockdown, end of the Premier League, the whole Ivic era. What was it like, though? Was it different at all?
Yeah, I mean, the Boxing Day games are always slightly different in terms of everyone's in quite a good mood. I don't know whether it's because people are happy to be out of the house and away from under the bundles of wrapping paper, or just happy to see each other. There is always a slightly elevated mood at a Boxing Day game, I find. But that was definitely the case yesterday, not just sort of for the lucky few that were there, but once the game started, the whole mood just seemed better. And the one thing, the big takeaway that I took from it, lads, was the fact that it was just noisier. The new head coach was very, very noisy, but also the subs and the support staff. Everything was elevated, everything was lifted. And when the goal went in, I mean, this is pushing the point a little bit, but it's almost as if there was a small crowd in there. There was a real, you know, there was a roar when the goal went in. And I think it's been noticeable in previous matches, last season and the start of this season. It's been very, very quiet without any crowd. It may feel like it's stating the obvious, but some teams have turned up and the bench has been very, very noisy, very animated. And Watford's never really has been. And that was really noticeable yesterday. The head coach himself was very effusive, very animated. And I thought there was more talking on the pitch as well, actually. I've bemoaned the lack of people not taking responsibility on the pitch, but there was lots of shouting from Troy, as you'd expect. And actually someone who has come in for a bit of criticism from me, well, for sustained periods, really, Etienne Capou, he was actually sort of raised his game from the audio stakes as well. So it just felt like the mood had shifted, and that manifested itself in just the sound. It was just more upbeat. It was more optimistic, and it was more like you'd expect a team playing football to be. You know what it's like if you walk past a park and there's matches going on, you know that there's a match going on before you get there, because you can hear all the shouting, you can hear all the sort of encouragement, all the sort of winding each other up and stuff. And that wasn't really there at Watford previously. And yesterday, it felt like more fun.
He is the absolute opposite of you, isn't he, Michael? Anyway, maybe Watford players have been playing in the mould of Ivic, and so have you. And maybe now we'll be podcasting in the mould of Cisco Munoz. Let's talk about the game, though, Jason. You know, going into the game against Norwich, having had what's happened in the last, you know, week, my expectations were fairly low in terms of getting 3 points from the game. Of course, that's what we always wanted, but it was more important to see an attitude change and just get an idea about how the new man's going to set himself up and set his team up. What did you get from that first half?
Defensively, I thought we defended quite narrow, almost to the point I was a little bit worried for Ngakia down the left-hand side, because he had Aarons and Cantwell sort of bombing at him, and Ken Semmer was had sort of drifted quite central at times to defend, and I was sort of worried that the fullbacks were going to get exposed and sort of overloaded. But actually, we dealt with things very, very well from a defensive point of view. The midfield dropped quite deep, and we sort of set up a good low block to prevent Norwich from really creating anything. Certainly in that first half, Foster wasn't tested at all. And then the attacks, it was fast, it was forward, and the goal summed it up nicely. It was Capou, I think, started it coming away with the ball, and he ran forward with the ball, and then he passed the ball forward into space. It was something we've not seen all season. I think I'd like to make a point about the front two as well. We were probably quite surprised to see a front two yesterday. We'd been told that Munoz likes to play 4-2-3-1. Was fully expecting to see that. I did wonder when I saw the lineup if he was going to do that and play Gray in a deeper role, but that wouldn't have suited him at all. Thankfully, he sort of played him as a front two. And just a point on on Gray. Again, some of the basic stuff he didn't do so well. His main job is to score goals, and he had chances that he probably should have done better with. But I thought he did a good job of running the channels. His work off the ball yesterday deserves some credit. His role in the goal deserves some credit.
Haven't we been saying that a lot about him, though? Haven't we been saying that for like 4 years almost?
We do, but yeah. I think he was an important part of the lineup yesterday. And obviously, you've asked me about the team, but just sort of raising a point on the individual here. With his runs off the ball, he was moving the Norwich defence about a bit, creating space, creating opportunities for the midfield to play a quick ball up to him, or Troy as well. Troy was sort of dropping deeper to pick the ball up and then sort of looking for Andre's runs and sort of played it into space for him to run onto. And in the goal, he made the run, got the ball, realised, sort of held it up, had two men on him, realised he needed to play the pass, got the pass right. And obviously then Kapu plays to Sema, who once again, it's Ken down the left, putting in a decent cross that took the goalie and the defender out. Obviously took a bit of a deflection, it was a bit of luck. But there was Sarr at the back post. Again, a winger coming in when the ball's on the opposite side, supporting the front two, getting into the box so that you've got numbers in the box. Again, that was a good thing and a key thing from yesterday that I picked up on. And we got the goal. And it was good. I thought we started on the front foot. We were keen to get the ball forward quickly, as evidenced by the goal. We had to weather a little bit of a Norwich storm. We know Norwich like to play possession football, and they did that sort of during the middle of the first half. But we sort of overcame that and then went again towards the end of the first half and got the rewards with the goal.
If the Watford merchandising team are listening, once again, it's Ken. That has to be a T-shirt, surely. If it was the WWE, they've had that on a T-shirt and printed and available by now. What a line that is. I would say, I think, well, we've mentioned Andre Gray. Let's box him off now, I think, because he's obviously, he's better than the output we're getting from him. We know that. We've seen him for Brentford. We've seen him for Burnley doing...
But never for Watford.
Doing okay. And his Watford career so far, let's face it, is a bust for a whole number of reasons. But as Jason said, there are little glimpses, and at the moment they are only little glimpses, of that there is still a decent footballer there. And the head coaches are putting him in. You know, Munoz has come in and given him the nod to start the game. So he's obviously doing something in training to get in ahead of, let's say, for example, Stipe Perica, who a lot of supporters have been impressed with. So he is doing stuff. And as Jason articulately put there, he did well in certain bits. What he's obviously lacking, and this may be... People may dismiss this because of the sort of character that I think we perceive Andre Gray to be. I mean, you know, we've all drawn our own conclusions over the past couple of months and years about the sort of character he is. He's a striker who is not scoring goals and is therefore lacking in confidence. And I still maintain if he can score, you know, two in one, then get another one, I think he may well be off to the races again, because he found himself in decent he forged out decent opportunities yesterday. And I think he snatched at them. You know, he put one into the side netting when really he should have scored. And I think that speaks to him lacking in confidence, which I think people are probably shying away from saying because of who he is and what he seems to be like as a person. But I've still got this little kernel of hope for him, and I'm glad to hear Jason sort of being positive about him, because I don't want to give up on him completely. You're right as well, John. You know, his Watford career so far has not been good. You know, I think someone did the math, sort of totting up the transfer fee and the wages we'd have paid him, and you know, he is not good value for money at the moment. But he's obviously showing something to get into that team, and I really hope it clicks. And I hope, you know, this potentially is the last chance saloon, you'd have thought, with a new head coach coming in again. But I'd like to see him be successful after everything that's happened. You know, that's happened. We've made our thoughts on it clear. I've made my thoughts on it clear. That won't change. But from a footballing point of view, I'd still like to see him be successful, because I think he could be helpful for Watford.
You know, he wasn't a success, but one of the big successes, I suppose, we might see in that game was the defence. Because your first message, the WhatsApp group, Mike, when that came out, wasn't particularly positive. And in fact, I went a little bit more, you know, negative about it when you see how they set up, because it was Sierra and Wilmot in the middle, but Ngakia and Kiko weren't in the right places or normal places.
No, absolutely. When, you know, I have to, my job for Opta, I have to call the call the formation before the game. That's part of the job. And I had them on the other side. I had Ngakia on the right and Firmino on the left. So that caught the eye once they actually started. I thought Ngakia did really well for the most part. I think towards the end, when he was substituted, I think he was hanging on in there a little bit. I think when you're playing out of position, I think it takes that extra degree of confidence, doesn't it? Which can be energy sapping, you know, the mental side of it. He's had to be 100% switched on throughout. And I think he was just perhaps tiring a little bit when Messina came on, and crikey, who knows what would have happened if that switch hadn't have happened. We'll no doubt come to talk about Adam Messina a bit later on. So Ngakia did really well, but a massive shout out to the centre-backs, Sir Alta and Wilmot. You did think, oh crikey, that's a partnership that hasn't played together in the centre at all for Watford. Sir Alta has hardly played for Watford at all. We're coming up against, I think Norwich had won 5 in a row and hadn't failed to score in 10 games. So pretty potent going forward, high on confidence, coming up against a centre-back pairing who hadn't played together for Watford. I was like, ugh, this could go one of two ways. Luckily, it went our way, and that's largely down to a commanding performance from both of them. I thought Sir Alta was absolutely dominant. I thought he looked really good. He didn't really put a foot wrong throughout. And I wonder whether when Ben Wilmot's played in as part as a three centre-back trio, sometimes he looks like he's been pulled out of position a little bit, and that worried me to a degree. But I thought yesterday, perhaps playing in a centre-back pairing, it made his job a little bit more straightforward, because you know where you're going to be. You don't have to think too much about it. You've got your area to deal with. You've got your, you know what's expected of you, a little bit more defined than when you're playing in a three. And, you know, Ben Wilmot's a footballer. I think he's a really, really adaptable, good player with a good footballing brain, a good touch. And I thought as a pairing, they were great. I spoke to my brother after the game and he said, look, you didn't notice them. You didn't think, oh, no, they're doing well, or they look, you know, they're doing okay for a pairing that's been cobbled together. I thought they were absolutely fantastic throughout. And Kiko on the right was brilliant as always. Again, really, really making a serious claim for player of the season for me already. But so, yeah, after those initial concerns looking at the team sheet, that initial sort of moment of scratching the head with Ngakia on the left, you know, after minute one, those fears were dispelled almost immediately, which I think is let's be less negative before the game has kicked off, but more importantly, credit to the back four. I thought they were absolutely terrific throughout. And let's not labour the point, this is a Watford podcast, but this was a Norwich team who's top of the league. They haven't not scored for 5 games, so they've scored it for 10 games. They've scored in all of their last 10 games, and have won 5. So for us to sort of limit them to what we did, how many saves did Ben Foster have to make? He had to be commanding a couple of times, come and clear his lines. But did he have to make a save? He wasn't extended. There were no Kodak moments for the GoPro, were there? So absolutely, I thought it was a really, really great performance from that back four, which is not a back four and not a sort of lineup that you'd have expected when we woke up yesterday.
Jason, the thing is, and Mike's mentioned it in a couple of podcasts, particularly in the last one, the number of complete games that Watford have had this season have been minimal. We've had a good half, either be the first half or the second half. But that second half, did you learn anything from it? Did you see anything different from this Watford squad?
It was almost a sort of tale of two halves for me. There was a clear point late on in the game where we decided, right, we've got this wrapped up, we're gonna start sitting deeper. And I think, I say game of two halves, I think it was around the 73rd minute, something like that I noticed it. All of a sudden we were starting to drop off. Before, we'd sort of chosen our moments when to press high and when to sort of drop and defend from the halfway line. All of a sudden now we seem to sort of dropping beyond the centre circle and sort of defending from that point, and just sort of really sort of soaking up the pressure, which I guess worried me a little bit, because you always worry when your team sort of sits back to defend, regardless of of what the score is, even more so when it's a one goal lead. But I thought we still actually created moments on the break. Paredes has won He probably wants to watch back himself. I think
went the wrong way, didn't he?
Yeah, still a little bit cold. Maybe should have taken the shot rather than go round the keeper, gave the defender the chance to get back in and clear the ball. But yeah, I say I was worried about the defending, but actually, we did the job really well. And again, it was sort of that low block, the midfielders coming back to help. We've talked about the quality of the centre back partnership that we saw yesterday, which I think obviously was the only centre back pairing really that we had left to choose from. Also, the fact that they are both very young. I think I've just worked out that if you add the two ages together of Sierra Alta and Wilmot, they're still younger than me.
That's not that hard, Jace.
Probably the case for the entire back four, isn't it, Jace?
careful. So they carried on that excellent first half they had. They carried on into the second half and just defended really well. The midfielders helping out as well, cleverly, and Capu dropping in. Where we've been told Muñoz is a very attacking coach, and you can see he does like to get the ball forward quickly. He still is able to set the team up to defend. And like Mike said, this is the best side in the division currently. The table presumably doesn't lie. They are capable of scoring goals. They've got quality in Pukki, in Cantwell, in Buendia. We saw him sort of running at players in abundance yesterday. He is a superb player. Mm-hmm. They can attack from the back with players like Aarons. And we dealt with it pretty comfortably. The only point where we had to sort of that desperate bit of defending, that last ditch tackle that was needed, was that one from Messina.
And what a pair of football boots he has. And that one little exercise boot made he could just poke that ball out of the way of Pukki. But I suppose I want to say, Mike, that tackle does sum up that second half for me in terms of it felt battling.
I said at the start that the mood felt happier. The whole game felt happier. And I have to say, the second half, if the first 20 minutes of the second half is a precursor as to what we're going to get from the Cisco side, I cannot wait. I found the first 20 minutes of the second half absolutely exhilarating. I thought we were all over Norwich. Jace has done a great job of explaining what talent they have, and that's true. But I thought Watford, came wave after wave after wave, and we didn't create as much as perhaps we would have liked from the level of momentum we had. But I think after 20 minutes, we had 8 or 9 corners in the second half. And it was pretty relentless. And the only slightly disappointing thing was that we weren't able to convert it and translate that into better chances. But it really was, Watford were really on the front foot. You just asked Jace what the difference was there. And it's probably easy to say it, but they were playing with the handbrake off a little bit. They were just playing with confidence. They had a little bit of swagger about them. And it's that swagger that we've been waiting to see all season, because this is a decent Watford side, and they finally started to show it. As Jason rightly said, they did sort of revert to let's see the game out mode after a while, after not managing to go 2 goals ahead. But both elements of that are fine, because they're the complete. It wasn't the complete performance. There's still a long way to go, but that's great. Give it at least, if you're going to shut up shop, give it a real good go first. And they absolutely did that. And then when they did decide they were going to try and keep it tight, they managed to do so. And as Jason rightly said, towards the end, with a better ball here and there, and a slightly clearer, cooler finish, they could have been 2 or 3 nil up and out of sight before the final whistle. But you said battling, John, and I think that's right. But they were battled without it being too chaotic. There was a lot of Norwich pressure towards the end, but Ben Foster didn't have to make a save. They had a couple of, they were restricted to pot shots really from distance. They had a lot of ball in and around the penalty area, but they dealt with it pretty well, especially considering the players that are really, really handy with the ball at their feet. Buendia and Aarons in particular, where they've got the ball at their feet and moving forward, you think, oh, this is going to be problematic. And I thought when Messina first came on, I thought he looked a little bit wary of Max Aarons, and he does that thing with puts his hands behind his back straight away when he's defending. And I thought, come on, concentrate on the ball. Don't worry about it being a handball. But he quickly got into. And can I just say about Adam Messina? What a splendid look! Shirt, sock
tucked in,
tucked in,
tucked in. Love it, Adam.
Shorts up, good lad. It was like I was like, yes, sir. That is a defender who is born to do the job. And he, you know, I thought he. He slotted into a defence that we've already mentioned did really well, and ultimately a 2-point saving tackle. It was absolutely phenomenal. Even when, you know, there was two Norwich correspondents in front of me, and they were sort of up in arms about how it should have been a penalty, and then the replay came on the screens, and they're like, oh. I mean, as John said, it's, you know, the boot size less or. You know, a split second less. You know, if he'd have had one sprout more for his Christmas lunch and was moving that a little bit slower, it would have been a penalty and or at least a certain goal. So that's what you need to get through, to get these results against, like you say, John, the best, or John, Jason, the best team in the league at this moment. Everyone needs to be on it for the whole time. And I think bringing that substitution on, credit to Munoz for doing it, making that switch, got his reward with that fantastic tackle and some really, really good defending. So, but I have to be honest, I half expected them to sort of sneak an equaliser somehow. But then coming away from the ground, I sort of chastised myself a little bit and thought, well, actually, they didn't get that big chance that you'd expect. You know, it's always going to be kitchen sink time for the last 5-10 minutes. There was 5 minutes of injury time at the end. But they didn't really, that chance never came, did they? And I think that is credit to Watford. And if you add it into that first 20 minutes of that second half, it was a real joy to watch. And I skipped away from Vicarage Road last night. I thought it was terrific.
Worth a mention though, Jason, the goal was by Ismail Azar. He was in the game a bit more. And I think, at least at the end, there was a smile.
Yeah, in the game more, and probably because we were playing more to his strengths. I talked about how we defended narrow. Football is a very simple game, and we attacked very wide as well, I thought, which suits Sarr. Get him on the outside, let him run at players. Ken was doing the same down the left. Even Cleverly was getting wide as well. He was sort of, when Kiko wasn't creating an overlap for Sarr, I cleverly did it a couple of times instead, gave Sarr either support to play down the wing with or to drag a man away to give him space to attack. So, yeah, I think he will be pleased with the way we played because it suited him more. He will be pleased with his performance. I think I'm right in remembering that Sky gave him the Man of the Match award as well. So it backs that up. And then at the end, yes, smile on his face, as did all of the Watford contingent on the sideline, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of back slapping going on. But more importantly, there were a lot of smiles. Did that sort of energy come up to the press area, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, huge, huge cheer went up when the final whistle went. And yeah, the just mood was just was high. It was just, there was energy, there was positivity, there was just everything that had really been lacking previously. And I don't think we can labour the point too much at all that getting Ismail Azar into the game is going to be integral if we can get this Watford side ticking. And he had much more space to run into. He still didn't do it perfectly. And opposition teams are going to be wise to him, so are going to make it difficult. But we got him moving down that flank much more. They switch over occasionally, and I don't think they make the most of that when they do switch positions to try and to try and take advantage of that. But yeah, I think it was the mood at the end. Just before I finish on a positive note, I will say, could do without Etienne Capoue trying to get sent off. I think in the Premier League, he probably would have seen red with a VAR check on that. I don't think it was as intentional. I'm going to even cut him some slack. I don't think it was as intentional as I'm led to believe they said on the TV. I think he was trying to get the ball. He's got those long, rangy legs and tried to snaffle the ball and managed to not, didn't he? Let's face it, it didn't look good at all. And I think if you look at that slowed down on VAR, the chances are he may well have seen red. And probably if he didn't, they might have had a look at the little tug for a second yellow. So he could have done without that. But let's move on from that quickly. And just look, it's the energy is there. And everything that we've said has been lacking, that intent, has been so important for me. We've been so passive in so many games this season against inferior opposition. And I thought last night against the team that's top of the table, they showed intent, they were fearless, they stuck to their task impressively, and at the end they were rightly cock-a-hoop. Now they need to do that again and again and again and again. And the more they do it, confidence should build. They should all feed off it. It's a good, powerful, strong, talented squad. And if they can bring we've talked about perhaps there being attitude issues within the squad. Well, if they can turn that round, then there's every chance. Let's not get too carried away. It's one result, one performance. They have got a rest now. Hopefully they can build on it. It's only one game, but what a game it was. And yeah, the mood at the end was high, and that has been missing. And if that can be the catalyst to more performances like that, then I am going to be one happy camper.
Thank goodness.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
If you're a subscriber to The Athletic, you might have already read the articles that Adam has put up there about the new manager, Cisco Munoz. You can read both those if you are a subscriber. If you're not a subscriber, then you can go to theathletic.com/rookeryend to get a subscription. You get one and you can give another one to a friend. There's an article, first one he put out, though, with a classic Athletic article to go for a good old deep dive and investigation into one topic. And this topic, of course, Adam had to look into the new man himself. Mike caught up with him before the game to find out what Adam had found during his investigation.
Boxing Day at a windy Vicarage Road, and the club have their own Christmas present in the shape of a new manager, head coach, don't they, Adam?
They do indeed.
You've written a piece on him, available now in The Athletic. But from your extensive research, from digging around about the new man, I'm going to let you pronounce his name, Cisco Munoz.
Yeah, that was very good.
Thank you very much. I got a Duolingo subscription for Christmas. What's the most interesting thing you found out about him during your little dig around about Cisco?
I've actually heard that Duolingo is going to be our next head coach.
Thank you for tuning in. This has been From the Record.
The first thing that's worth sticking a flag in is that, yeah, I wrote a background piece on him. And we learnt, you know, at the time that Vladimirovic was going to be sacked, some initial thoughts about his background. And obviously we learnt about him being a player and all that sort of stuff, and his recent experience in Georgia, which I think, and I wanted to say that there was a lot of sort of negativity towards his lack of experience at the beginning. People were saying, oh, you know, he's only had 11 games in Georgia and all that sort of stuff. But he was actually head coach for the season before that, when he was partnering with another Spanish guy. He had the better license, so it was sort of his name on the papers almost. So he's won back-to-back titles. He came back in the middle of last season, which finished earlier on this month. So that's when those 11 games came. But I just found it a little bit sort of irritating that people were going, oh, you know, he's only had this amount of games.
I wonder there's a bit of fatigue both amongst Watford supporters and the wider sort of football watching world. You know, outside Vicarage Road, it's very much a case of here we go again. And no, really, eyebrows aren't really raised that much these days. Whoever comes in, it could be, you know, it could be the baby Jesus fresh from Christmas Day, and I don't think many people would raise an eyebrow. But I think Watford supporters, we've talked about the disconnect about not being at the ground. You know, the majority of Watford supporters will never have seen a Vladimirovic side play, so it's kind of difficult to get too excited. So I do understand it, but it's a really valid point. He's a serious operator, isn't he? Is there a little nugget that you found out about our man?
Well, there are a couple. The thing that I was going to say before I meandered off onto another path, as I usually do, is that we spoke to him this week, and you know, I think that the overriding thing from him is that it's light and shade between him and Vladimirovic, and I find it quite challenging, actually, speaking about Vladimirovic in such a negative way, because I actually quite liked him I thought there was a great sort of honesty to him and integrity to him. I think it ended up that he was sort of sucking the fun out of things a little bit too much. But I also had quite a lot of sympathy for him, the fact that he was thrown into a very difficult situation. But, you know, the point is, we got to speak to Munoz, and yeah, he's just got a smile on his face. And I think that makes the world of difference. Going back to some sort of little bits that I found out about him, which are a little bit off the beaten track, the fact that he keeps horses at home, in his home in Mallorca. He was born in the same place as Rafa Nadal. Absolutely no relevance whatsoever. If he's good at tennis, that's great. That he seems to exude a person that exude characteristics of someone that enjoys sunshine, enjoys fun, enjoys...
Oh, oh dear. We're in the midst of storm birth, or whatever it's called.
Exactly, but he's just got that sunny disposition. Sure. And, you know, I think we might have mentioned it before, but it just seemed towards the end of the Ivic era, they were playing in his image. Hopefully this side now can play in the image of Chisco Munoz, because he has got experience at a lower level in Spain already. He's got, you know, more experience, yes, at a lesser league in Georgia, but they were still playing European football and things like that. So he has experience of being in a dressing room. And I spoke to the communications officer at Dynamo Tbilisi, and he had so much positivity about the way that he dealt with, you know, not only the media, but just the way that he dealt with everyone, in particular, connecting with the players, you know, taking time to understand them, not just as players, not just as entities, not just as a right back, not just as someone that's just going to hold there and not do this, but more about who they are. And I think, you know, look, Ivic was a former player, of course, and he has that understanding, and he talked about psychology as well. But Munoz seems to enjoy being more of a player's manager.
Do you think that might be something that caught Gino's eye in terms of the recruitment?
I think so. You know, they wanted someone that was young and enthusiastic. You know, Ivic was young. It's just he wasn't that enthusiastic. That's the thing. I mean. And again, I go back. I don't want to be sort of harsh and personal on him, because, you know, he's a human being, and he's a family guy and all that sort of stuff. But it wasn't the right marriage, was it? It just didn't quite work out. And, you know, what we want to see now is Watford going out, going toe to toe with oppositions, not being too conscious of who they're playing. And hopefully that enthusiasm and that motivation that he brings with him, you know, the fact that he likes music in the dressing room, he likes players being able to relax a little bit in the training ground, which was sort of, you know, pushed to the side under Ivic. I think, you know, all these things, just to make it a bit more feel good. And that's all you can ask. You know, it's been an absolutely, searches for a non-swear word, year 2020. Hopefully the players are now coming into work. They've got someone greeting them with a smile on their face. Yes, they're going to be demanded of. They're going to have demands put on them. But they're going to be told to go out there and enjoy it and not hopefully be constrained on the football pitch. He will need a little bit of time to get his, you know, his philosophy out on the pitch. But I think in general, if it's pass the ball forward, go for it, take a gamble. You know, fortune favours the brave. And that's hopefully the ethos that he puts out onto the pitch.
So to sum up, a more cheery disposition, more into putting an arm around the players, getting to understand what makes the players tick, and perhaps getting on the front foot. And you mentioned in the piece you're liking him a little bit to Gianfranco Zola in that regard, which, you know, put a spring in my step a little bit, because obviously it didn't end well under Gianfranco, but that's what started the Zola coaster, started the joyous part of the Pozzo regime, didn't it? Rafa Benitez, another big name linked to this guy, he had a few things to say about him as well, didn't he?
Yeah, and you know, I think that sort of shows that, yes, whilst he's sunny and happy and shiny and, you know, fun and laughs, there is, you know, a strong association with a very highly thought of technician of the game in Rafa Benitez, and he calls him sort of his inspiration. If you've played under a manager like that as well, you don't just throw caution to the wind at all costs. It's not going to be like Blackpool when they were in the Premier League and losing 5-4 and all that sort of stuff. But it's going to allow the team to go forward with the right balance, hopefully. Yes, he spoke about him. He said, you know, he was always very dependable. He was in a Valencia side that was a very strong side at that point, so he wasn't always in the team, but he always thought highly of him. And, you know, he got in touch with him when he found out he's going to get the job as well. So, you know, he's got friends in solid places as well. And hopefully, over time, it sort of reminds me a little bit of when Kike first came in. And Ian Wright said on Match of the Day, oh, there's a new sheriff in town. I'm hoping that there's going to be that feel around Chisco. And the same as when Zola finally got to grips with it. You could imagine, and I go back to another article I did on The Athletic when I spoke to Nathaniel Shalabar, and he was saying how he would always practice, you know, free kicks with them, and he would invariably be better than, I mean, we know how bad Watford are at free kicks. There's another link, there's another article on The Athletic about that. I could just sort of picture it a little bit more. Maybe we're getting a bit sort of rose-tinted already. Fingers crossed that they've made a change. It's another gamble. It's going to come back to bite them if it doesn't work out. We all know that. But at the end of the day, I've been sort of thinking about it quite a lot, and you see so much vitriol and you see so much sort of animosity towards what's being done at the club and things like that. Yes, it's not great. It's not great PR. But at the end of the day, look, this is a game. They're trying to put a team out there to go and play decent football and enjoy it, make it enjoyable for the people watching at home. And that wasn't happening. And hopefully now, got someone in place that's just going to fill it with a little bit more sunshine when the fans can't be here. You know, giving them the boot up the bum that they need.
It's the start of a new era. Let's hope they don't literally throw caution to the wind tonight, because if they do, it will blow back straight into their faces. Wet, windy and wild here at Vicarage Road as the Munoz era gets underway.
And after the game, Adam was at the press conference, and we can hear now from what the main man had to say after the 1-0 home win against Norwich City.
I'm very happy today, you know. We know today we have a difficult game. I'm very happy, you know, because this is our way, this is our style. The players play like team, the group, they give everything. I'm sure today I'm sleep very good, you know. Also, the last 2 days in the training was very good. I can say congratulations of the players, you know, because they give everything. I'm very happy with them because they play very hard. This is our way. It's the moment for enjoy today. And also I spoke with them before the game about this. And it's important when you have these important games, it's fight in the first minute and the last minute. Okay, I think our fans today stay very happy because they received these 3 points. This is the way. And the players is continue work like this. I'm very happy with them. And repeat, today is the day for say congratulations for the players because we have our chance. We know also where is the attack of the Norwich, and we want to stop this attack. And I know what we try to have a little push-up, and when you have this push-up, we recover too much time the ball near of the penalty area of them, and we have the chance. But it doesn't matter. We need to continue and ensure our striker next time we can score more.
Cisco, describe what the atmosphere was like inside the dressing room at the end of the game. We saw you in the dugout congratulating everyone. Was that energy taken into the dressing room as well?
Yeah, it was very good, you know, after the game. I think we have a very good group. And this is important, you know. When everyone have the same way, it's perfect. I repeat another time. I can say thank you for the players because they give the maximum. It's important everybody know today was a difficult game and they have a very good reaction, you know. Right now is the moment for enjoy, and the reaction of the dressing room was perfect because also they won this game for our fans, you know.
Mike, I don't know. I from everything we've learned about him, everything Adam found out about him, I just thought he'd be like a little tigger in that press conference. I mean, he was positive, but you know, I just thought he'd be going, "Hey, everybody, how you doing?"
He does exude positivity, and it is one game. And I think Adam makes a really good point, and that people have been a little bit dismissive of him in terms of his managerial career, and his career as a whole. Really, people are very quick to overlook his playing career, which is obviously pretty decent. In Adam's piece, he mentions Rafa Benitez is very, very positive about him. And then, you know, you talk about managerial careers. Everyone's managerial career starts somewhere. Pep Guardiola hadn't managed somewhere once. Alex Ferguson hadn't managed anywhere of note once. And so on and so forth. So I think Adam makes a very good point to sort of add a bit of, you know, respect to his name, really. And I think people are quick to dismiss him. And perhaps when you I know that you're not being serious when you say that, John, but when you look at his smile, you know, the smiley pictures of him in the lead up to the game, Watford supporters are like, oh yeah, I can get behind him, in a sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek way. Now, this is, he's definitely a serious operator. I think everything that Adam found out and wrote about and everything that we saw at the game against Norwich indicates that he's a man with a plan, and a man with experience, and a man who is very, very focused on success. He was very quick to praise his players. I love the fact that he's someone that it looks like he gets to know his players, to work out what gets them ticking. And all that was borne out, most importantly, what we see on the pitch. Because I couldn't help but think yesterday about all the talking we did about when Vladimir Ivic joined us, and we spoke to people with knowledge of him and knowledge of what he'd done at club level elsewhere, and we were quite positive. So we're there again now. But everything sort of straight away, the impact that Munoz seems to have had almost overnight, and I know there's a new manager bounce, but it does feel different. And I love all the stuff that's coming together from the two pieces that Adam's done. One, the pre-match research into his career, and then B, the second one that's out now in The Athletic, looking about how yesterday, how the Norwich game sort of came to fruition and what the setup was like for that. So really, really encouraging signs. I think he's definitely a serious character. He's here to advance his career. He's here to get success. You don't get to where he is in life without that. And I think the little attention to detail that he has, I think his understanding, I think he might be the answer to, you know, I've spoken about it and I got quite animated in the previous podcast about being concerned about some of these players. They probably obviously need to be managed. If the attitude isn't correct, they need to have that managed out of them. And I think it, as a head coach who takes time to do that, focus on these individual players, work out what they need to work at their best, is great. So I think this is, you know, it's easy to dismiss him as a fun character and energetic and smiley, and that's great. But make no mistake about it, this is a serious operator, I think, and the early signs borne out in the game against Norwich and the pieces that Adam's done on his arrival at Watford, it looks like it could be a canny appointment by the Pozzos.
The point about his playing career is a very good one, actually, Mike, because my fear with our current playing squad is that perhaps some of them think they are bigger than what we already are because they've played in the Premier League. Some of them have played in an FA Cup final, whereas now you've got an ex-player who was part of a La Liga winning squad, part of a Europa League winning squad. He actually has made it. He's achieved more in his playing career than these guys. And he can probably have that connect with them from the playing experience side and actually drag them back up to where they need to be.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
It is the end of the year, and I don't know about you, but you know, 2020 was a lot about staying inside, and especially lockdown one was all about a quiz. So Jason and Mike, as team from the Rookery End, you're taking myself on with 10 questions all about Watford in 2020. Various different ways of gaining points. Maximum score is 66. Let's see how well you do on this. Question one comes from January. In the FA Cup, Watford didn't make it past the third round. But how many young Hornets made their debut in the FA Cup this year? You get 5 points for getting the right number of players.
Oh my gosh. So did Dele Bashiru make his debut in that game?
I'm not sure. Trying to think of the players that did play that were. So Chalobah played in the first game. Keener played in the first game. The rest of the places were probably taken up by,
yeah,
by kids. And then the subs
Backman
came on.
Backman in goal, was he?
So I reckon if we go something like 9?
No, not that many.
No, because the subs as well.
Oh, we're counting subs as well?
And the replay as well, I presume.
Oh, yeah, good point. That striker played was on the bench, wasn't he? Sam Dalby.
Who's the lad that scored the goal?
The guy that was on the bench last night was featured, I reckon. Hungbo.
How many do you want?
Nine, it was nine still too many. Have I gone in too high?
No, I reckon you might be right. Do they have to have taken to the field, John?
Yes.
Oh, okay, then probably. Although the replay as well.
Yeah, because that would...
Let's go with nine, Jace. Let's go with your gut feeling. Yeah.
Go on then, nine.
The answer 10.
Oy. Ooh,
close.
Extra points. So you don't get any. You don't get any points for that round. But I'll give you a bonus point for every player you can name.
Bailey Spencer Adams. Because he was 51, wasn't he? I remember him. He played quite well, I thought.
There was that. Was there an ex-Man United guy that we let go in the summer?
Dalby was in the squad. I don't know if he played in the first game. Because I remember being quite excited about that.
I know Phillips wasn't there because he was at Hemel at that time, wasn't he?
So what have we said so far? Spencer Adams, yeah. Hungbo, Sam Dalby.
Yep, so it's three.
God, who scored the goal in the replay?
I'm really stuck.
Well, the other players were. I'm going to give you time. So, Tom Delibashiru made his debut in the first game.
I did mention him.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, well, I'll give you that one then. Four. And, of course, he scored the goal in the first game. Bailey Spencer Adams, Callum Whelan, Mason
Barrett. That's the guy from Man United, Callum Whelan. Yeah.
Mason Barrett, Mr. Younger, Wise Jr., played in the second game.
Oh, God.
Hines scored the goal in the replay. Hungbo. Bennett, and of course, as you mentioned, Sam Dalby. Of course, the one you didn't mention was João Pedro.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yeah. Came on at half time, didn't he, in the first game?
Okay. Question two. 5 points for getting this fully correct. Beating Liverpool, Watford scored three goals against Liverpool in February. Goals from Ismail Azar and Troy Deeney. You might remember it. But however, who were the goal scorers the last time Watford scored three against Liverpool?
Nathan Ake. And Eugen Ighalo. No, it's not. No. Because it was a 3-3 draw, wasn't it, the season after?
Oh, yeah.
Britos, because he got the last-minute equaliser.
Yeah. Oh, well done, Jace. I would have gone for that as well. I forgot about that.
I thought I was going to get you on that one.
I nearly dived in too early. But like Messina, I just got a touch on the ball, I think. Britos got the equaliser, didn't
Decore.
Correct.
Yes, I think it was Decore, yeah.
Who got the first? Watford went ahead early, yeah. Didn't they?
Was it Troy?
No. What year was it?
It was August 2017. It was the 3-3 opening game of the season.
Marco Silva season.
I'm just trying to picture it now. Because Salah, was that Salah's first game?
Yeah.
At Liverpool.
Yeah. And we went 2-1 up pretty quickly afterwards.
I know who it was.
Go on.
Akaka.
Correct.
Yes. Because I can remember exactly where I was. I was on a lounger in France, watching Arlo thunder down some water flume, which is far too big for a boy his age at that time.
Not exactly a question about this last year, but it was related. I tried to think of another way.
Good question.
thank you. Yeah. Question three. 2020 has been about fixture congestion, but which month did Watford play the most number of games? And I will include cup games.
I wonder if it was post-lockdown.
It's got, but is it December? It could be September, because we had all the League Cup games, and it was, I think it was almost.
So what happened post-lockdown? We had Leicester.
We played 9 games post-lockdown, but what month were they in?
That was June and July, wasn't it? It was across 2 months.
July? Could it be July? Premier League, you don't tend to play. It's one a week, really, isn't it? As a rule, 4, maybe 5 in a month. What did you say, Jay? September?
I said December. Also, September. Was that the start of the season? September, when we'd have played League Cup. We'd then have had another league. We'd have had a gap because we didn't. Obviously, we missed out on a cup game, and we didn't play cup. We didn't play cup first round either, so we'd have missed out there. Maybe I just wonder if it's December, because we've been week midweek.
What, this December?
This is I think this is the only December in 2020, if I remember rightly.
I can push you for an answer now.
Okay, yeah, let's go December then. This December
is correct.
Well done, Jay. Good luck.
Yeah, it was close. January we played 6 games. July we played 6 games, and October we played 6 games. But of course, December was 7, and of course, it should have been 8. Question 4. I'm going to give you 5 points for being spot on, 2 points being one either side. Transfers. In the two transfer windows of 2020, how many Watford players were signed on loan or permanently? All together in both those windows.
Pesetto. He was January, wasn't he?
Correct.
Ngakia. Perica. I guess Pedro counts. Does he? Does it? Does that count? Because that's when he
does count. Yes.
Right. Well done, Jace.
Glenn Murray, if anyone remembers him.
Done. Yeah.
Sierra Alta.
Yeah. You get extra points for each one of these. I'll give you an extra point for
William
all the
Troost Econ.
Oh yeah. I think that's seven so far, isn't it?
Who else? Let's think about the team. Who's new? Who's new?
James Garner.
Oh, well done. Ken doesn't count, does he?
No.
So you've named me eight players there, and you'll get a point for each one of those. But I want you to see if you can try and tell me how many in total do you think we signed?
So you're not eight, because otherwise you wouldn't have said it like that.
Well, he might be bluffing.
Well, I can't think of any more.
Remember, this is all the signings that the club have made.
Ah, well, the manager?
No, players.
Any youngsters that we've signed?
So there was that kid that came in, wasn't there, in January? Well, there'll be loads, won't there? I can't remember his name for love nor money, I'm sorry.
I'm going to push you for a number now, please.
If you've got extra one in there, do you want to say nine then?
Yeah, let's say nine.
By my calculations, thanks to Wikipedia, I make it 11.
Oh, who did we miss out?
So you missed out the signing of Miles Roberts in January from Reading. Of course, remember that. Toby Stevenson, who played, of course, in the League Cup this year. Yeah. And also in September, Maxwell Statham.
I think there was another one, wasn't there?
They're the only ones I've got in my research last night on their Wikipedia. So it was 11, but you did get yourself an extra 8 points for naming all those signings. Next set of questions are win, lose or draw. If 2020 was a complete season, it would have had 39 league games and Watford would have gained 55 points. But how many wins did Watford get in 2020?
Oh, for heaven's sake.
does that include cup games?
It doesn't. This is league games only. Games. 5 points being spot on, 2 points for being one either side.
Well, how many have we got at the moment?
Oh, we'll have to run through it. Who did we beat? So we've beaten Norwich, Birmingham. This is going to take forever. Well, actually, not that. Liverpool, Norwich, Newcastle. Did we beat anyone before? So Liverpool was February, wasn't it? Did we beat anyone in January?
Beat Bournemouth in January.
Ah, well done. Villa at home, was that in the new year?
Oh, I think that might have been. I don't know if that was Christmas time.
Yeah,
Villa
Man United was Christmas, wasn't it?
Man United was just before Christmas.
So Bournemouth, Liverpool, Newcastle and Norwich in the Premier League. So that's four in the Premier League. And then what we're saying this year, should we try and run through them?
Middlesbrough, Luton,
Derby,
Stoke and Coventry.
So that's nine.
Rotherham,
Blackburn, 11. Norwich, 12.
And Birmingham, 13.
13. Lucky for us, Mr. Mooney.
Let's go 13.
It was 15.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So no points in question five. Because it's five being spot on and two for being one either side. Games you missed out, of course, were Wolves, which was the first win of the season.
New Year's Day.
Sorry.
And the one you missed out was Preston. Right, question. And maybe that last one will help you with this one. How many games did Watford lose in 2020? Remember, it's 5 points being spot on, 2 points being one either side. With 15 wins, how many losses do you think we had out of 39 games?
A lot.
I reckon it's about 15 again. It's going to be a similar number, I reckon.
Do it. 15.
15.
It's 14, but you get 2 points for being one away. And, of course, that leaves us with 10 draws. Question 7. How many league goals have Watford scored in 2020? 5 points being spot on, 2 points for being two either side of the actual answer.
Can you tell us how many games we've played again in the league?
39, wasn't it?
So I reckon
about 1.5 a game. Average?
Yeah, if that, yeah. So well, yeah, 1.5.
About 50.
Is it that many? I want to say a bit less. 45.
Because we had a couple of threes and a four, haven't we? And we had the three against Liverpool.
Yeah. Three against Bournemouth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Three against Stoke, three against Blackburn, four against Preston.
Maybe 55.
All right, done.
55.
Mike said the answer, it was 45.
Ah!
Then no points on question 7. Number 8. How many teams have we played home and away in 2020? I'll give you 5 points for being spot on.
Oh, gosh. Bournemouth.
So doubles as it effectively.
Yeah, we're playing both home and away.
Was Norwich before Norwich. Christmas? Away in the Premier League, it was.
Away,
wasn't it?
Away was before Christmas, yeah.
So I'm going to say, I want to say one.
Hang on, so who else?
Oh, hang on, Tranmere.
Did you say in the league? Or?
No, I didn't say in the league. What's your final answer then?
Two.
That is correct. 5 points.
Yay. Well done, Michael.
Question 9, 2 to go. For 5 points, how many teams beginning with B have Watford played in 2020?
Let's Bournemouth, go Premier League first.
Brentford. Oh, sorry. Right. Okay. Go on in.
So Bournemouth in the Premier League. That's it. Yeah. And then Brentford.
Brentford, Blackburn, Bristol City.
Yeah. Birmingham.
Birmingham, Barnsley. Oh, Burnley in the Premier League.
Ooh, well done.
Brighton. When did we play Brighton?
First game of the season.
Away game was when Mariappa scored that own goal. That was under Pearson. That was under Pearson. So that would have been January, I think, January or February time.
Okay, so Bournemouth, Burnley, Brighton, and then
Birmingham, Blackburn, Bristol City, Barnsley, Brentford.
8.
Is the correct answer.
Yes. Get in there.
All 5 points for all 8 of those teams. Well done. Final question. Which Watford head coach took charge of the most number of competitive games in 2020? 5 points for picking the right man.
Ivic.
I was going to say Ivic because, yeah, just the number of games that just kept coming and coming and coming.
Is the correct answer.
It's in there. Well done, Vlad.
Out of a possible 66 points, you scored 39. Not a bad score, lads. Not a bad score.
We're staying up.
Are we going up? You know, we've got a week off now. We've got a game against Swansea, then the FA Cup, and then we'll be back into it all. The relentlessness of the Championship. After that game yesterday, Mike. Let's go back. After that Huddersfield game, did you think Watford were going to get automatic, would make the playoffs, or would just not have enough to even do that?
I was flicking through the programme and there was pictures from Huddersfield and I thought it reminded me just how desolate it was. You know, not Huddersfield, it's lovely up there, but the feeling after the match, we were all very, very low, weren't we? Me in particular. And at that point, it felt like we were a long way from turning the ship around. But was it pains early to say this is only one game? But the feeling about the team and the club feels very, very different already. And I was speaking to my dad on the way home from the game yesterday. I always called mum and dad on the walk back from the ground with a bit of a debrief. And dad was saying, not a great day, really, in terms of other results. And I said, well, do you know what? I'm not actually looking at other results. I'm not actually looking at the table because I feel and have felt throughout the season that if this Watford side clicks, they will get promoted. And that's not analytical. That's not looking at who we've got to play when. It's not looking about how other teams are performing. That's just my gut feeling about Watford. If this team plays to their potential, they will get promoted. After Huddersfield, I thought there was absolutely no chance that this team would do anything other than get mired in mid-table and end up with some very, very difficult discussions having to be had at the end of the season. For the first time in a long time, I've seen the sort of little green shoots of recovery, the little embers are starting to turn into flames yesterday. And if they can build on yesterday, then I'm confident that this side, if they play to their potential, will be in with a massive, massive shout of getting promoted. We've taken it to the league leaders yesterday and we've beaten them. And I think Watford deserved the win. If they'd have taken the game to Nottingham Forest, if they'd have taken the game to Bristol City, if they'd taken the game to Barnsley, if they'd taken the game to Huddersfield, we would have had more points and it would have been us that was the league leaders yesterday. So we've shown what we should have done, I think. We need to carry on doing that. We haven't given ourselves that much room for error anymore. We need to now be very consistent for the rest of the season, which is obviously a massive ask. But I feel already far more comfortable and confident that we're at least going to give it a good go. And I didn't feel like that a week ago. I'm not worried about other teams. I'm focused solely on this side. I think they can do it. That's based on nothing else than looking at us.
Jason, how do you feel now, though?
Yeah, definitely feeling positive. I am going to bring other teams into it. I know Norwich have got a little bit of a gap up there, but we've shown we can beat them, and they've got defeats in them. They lost to Luton, I think, before they started this five-game run they were on, of all teams. So, yeah, they can lose. And this season does feel very championshipy for the Championship. There's a lot of teams up there that have lost a lot of games, but yet still find themselves up in the mix. So I think if we, as Mike says, if we just keep doing our own thing, the other teams will slip up every now and again, and we will find ourselves in or about the danger zone at the right end of the table.
So that is the end of a very different year of doing podcasts from the Rookery End. It was a special year because it was our 10th birthday, and we did a fantastic week of podcasts, which you can go back and listen to if you haven't done yet. We had the fantastic live commentaries for Colin to fill that void of the season being on hold, and many we weren't even sure if it was going to come back at all, and that was a much better season because in that season that Colin commentated on, Watford stayed up. But Mike, it has been a weird year.
It's been a really difficult year, and I'm always reminded when we talk about football on the podcast, it's lovely for us to be able to do it. You know, we've made amazing friendships which have got stronger again this year. But I'm always reminded, this year more than ever, that there's a world out there outside football, and a lot goes on that's difficult. And this year has been awful for virtually everyone, some for a lot worse than others, and it's not one that we will be sorry to see the back of at all. So well done to everyone for getting through it. Thank you to everyone that's listened to all the podcasts through it. Some the incredible stuff from Colin, for example, in the made up commentaries. So thank you to everyone for sticking with us during what was a nasty year. It's great that we're going into the new year feeling this positivity. Everything I said about the ground yesterday, it feels like a corner is being turned at the football club, and hopefully a corner is being turned in the wider world as well. And we'll have, this time next year, we will have much better things to talk about, whether Watford go up or not. That really isn't the most important thing. If we're all here happy and healthy in a year's time, then I think we'll have done well, and we'll have a lot to be grateful for. So great that Watford are looking up. Hopefully stuff's looking up for everyone, and I can't stress it enough. Thank you to everyone for sticking with us. Thank you for all the feedback. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you for sticking with Watford. They're the glue that bind us all together. We love them through thick and thin. It's been a tough year, a tough, horrible year. But there's another one ahead of us, and I think we can look forward to it with some anticipation.
Thank you for listening to, if you listen to one episode or all 79 episodes that we put out in 2020.
79.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Michael.
Yeah, more than welcome. Come on your horns. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And of course, you know, stuff is sticking. It is still difficult out there. So do feel free to hit us up if you're struggling or want a chat or anything. I know a lot of people make that offer, but it's a genuine offer. If you're finding it difficult, get in touch. We're all here and always happy to talk.
And thank you, Jason.
I can't believe you didn't put the number of podcast question on the quiz.
Of course, a massive thank you to Adam Leventhal, old friend, but now a big member of the team here on From the Rookery End, and all his help and content, and the tremendous, well, basically helping us increase our coverage for you as Watford fans. And an extra special thank you to everybody, especially DCW at The Athletic, who have been massive support for us this year to help us make us bigger and better, and hopefully not badder, as a podcast for you, the Watford fans. Thank you also to Colin, to DCW, to Geordie, to Kieran, and to basically anybody who's contributed to this podcast. And there have been many, many,
and
many.
And Arlo. He'll kill me if we don't say well done, Arlo.
Come on, you horns!